and welcome. This is the Nokomoto Podcast, episode number 115. I'm your host, MotoG Pete. With me is your other host, Swiggy.
Yep.
Manning the board is our new intern, Jeff with a PH. You have very small shoes to fill, Jeff. That's enough. Okay. Like I said, this is episode 115, coming to you from Moto One Podcast Network Studios North, otherwise known as Shea Pete. We've got, you know, we had a legit one of our 300 days of sunshine that we get every year here in Northern Colorado today.
I was robbed of.
Yeah, you were. We'll get into that in a minute. And, you know, I haven't reminded anyone at the top of the episode for a long time. If this is your second episode that you've heard or higher, it is your cost of admission to leave us a rating and review somewhere, or just share the show with somebody instead if the mode that you listen to the show doesn't allow ratings and reviews. It is your cost of admission. We have done this for 115 fucking weeks in a row for free. We were going to start a Patreon, but, you know, what's been going on happened. So it seemed in poor taste to start asking people for money. So we'll continue to do it for free and without any Patreon or anything like that in the meantime. And yeah, that's all we ask from you. So let's see. In this episode, we are going to do best worst bike as always. We're going to do a little bit of news with what's going on in our motorcycle lives. A possible plan for an event that we might be planning. I know that sounds super weird coming from us at this particular time in history, but trust me, that's pretty interesting. And we're going to do Made Up Motorcycle today, because we just got a tease of it last week, and I thought it was starting to go so good, we just need to finish it out. Old school, just us two. So, let's see. Do we want to start with what happened to the Superhawk today?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay. Well, walk us through what happened. So, well, I guess people don't know, since you don't have any working bikes, I loaned you the Superhawk for a couple weeks.
Yes.
Right. And so take it from there.
Okay. So, I've had the Superhawk for a few weeks. And even then, I haven't really been riding it a ton because I haven't had a lot of places to go. And not a lot of good reasons. But the stay-at-home order ended here. I was going to come up here to record, and I thought, you know what? The weather's warm. It's going to be lovely. I should just take the Superhawk. And then that's a good 140 miles round trip I get to do on a bike, because I haven't really done a lot of riding this year. So I get everything all set up. I get all my gear on. I get all prepped and ready. And I go out to the Superhawk. And I put the key in and turn it. And no lights come on. And I'm thinking, that's a little weird. Even if the battery was low, I'd expect something to show up, or just to light up a little bit. But it was absolutely nothing. I thought, wow, maybe the battery is totally dead. So I pull my truck around, and I hook up the jumper cables to the battery. And, you know, I was just really looking. I didn't even really try to start. I was just looking to get some lights to come on. And I couldn't get it to do it. And at that point, I called you. And I was wondering, hey, is there anything funky that anything stupid that I'm forgetting about getting this bike started? And then we talked about a few different little things. And as I was walking around looking at it, I had a thought. And I just looked under the top of the forks and found that somebody had slashed the cables to the ignition cylinder. Somebody had tried and failed to hotwire the Superhawk.
So, this is an attempted crime that has a real late 80s charm to it. I mean, I'm not stoked about it, but it is kind of funny. You don't really hear about people hot wiring cars and bikes and things anymore. I mean, it seemed to be a skill that just any wayward 17-year-old had in the 80s, if Hollywood was to be believed. But yeah. To this day, I'm not really entirely sure what hot wiring entails. I mean, I know obviously the ignition turns, it closes a contact, and the battery goes off, right? But has it really ever been as easy as just pull some wires and touch them together?
Sort of. There are four wires that go into, especially for like, I mean, it's a little bit simpler on some older bikes, but yeah, for a bike that's essentially analog, it's not as simple as two wires go into the ignition, and then when you turn the key, it touches two contacts and you close a circuit. There's actually four wires on most of those older bikes, and you have to be able to identify them and turn them and connect them the right way. In fact, we watched somebody do it when the ignition cylinder got all fucked up in the middle of a ride with the CB1000.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we had someone hotwire the CB1000. I forgot about that. He was a professional mechanic, too. He was like, do not tell anybody I did this. I mean, he's a douchebag, but I'm still not going to name his name. But I remember he's like, this bad things could happen if people know I did this.
So, I mean, it's not hard, but you have to spend more. You have to spend like 15 minutes looking it up online. But is it difficult? No. But if you're some asshole off the street who decided, hey, I'm going to try and steal this, and like you didn't know what you were doing, I'm sure you could fuck it up pretty quickly and give up.
Now, I mean, the Superhawk is carbureted, but it's not that analog. It does have an ECU.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter if all you need to do is get the ignition on. There's no electronic security around that.
I guess not.
It's all just purely mechanical.
Hmm. Well, anyway, they were not able to hotwire it. And I...
Well, now they've got a bigger challenge in front of them because I chained it up by the frame. I couldn't get it like frame to frame against the Futura. But what I did do is I went from frame on the Superhawk to the rear wheel on the Futura. And I'm kind of the, I know it's not the best practice, but I'm of the opinion that if somebody in the dead of night can get a rear wheel off of a Futura, they've earned themselves a Superhawk.
Well, they would probably just try to pick up and move both bikes together. But I imagine if the Superhawk and the Futura get stolen, I mean, we'll get so much more money for them than they're actually worth in insurance.
That's true.
And I believe they're both like fully insured, right?
Yes.
I know the Superhawk is. I've got comp and collision, all that. So, yeah. That would be a great way just to immediately bring in two new bikes.
Can you imagine some like bike thief operation stealing both of those bikes? Them getting back to the chop shop and the boss just saying, what the fuck did you just steal?
Well, the Superhawk's pretty sellable, but the Futura is not. I mean, the Superhawk's not sellable for a ton of cash, but they'll get, $2,000 for it.
I don't know who is buying Futuras with no title.
Yeah. Well, the Superhawk's a common enough bike they could get some. They could buy some trashed bike and then just sell it, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, hopefully, it's going to be like a week before I can get down there with a trailer to bring the Superhawk back up here. If I decide to spend the deductible and get it fixed at a shop, I guess that could include towing to the thing. I wonder if my AAA membership would get it towed to a shop for repair. I don't know. Anyway, it's probably not that hard to fix on my own.
It depends. I don't know. I just don't know how much wire you need to fish out and replace, or if you're just going to splice it back together or whatnot, but it could be easy. It could be
my difficult. Immediate thought was splice it back together and just cover everything in heat shrinks.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to explore it.
Yeah. Okay, so let's move on to Best Worst Bike in the World this week.
Let's do it.
Okay, so here's the deal. Every week, we each pick two different motorcycles. They are to be the best and worst bike in the world this week. We don't know what each other have chosen. It's always a surprise. Like I said, we alternate who has the best and worst bike. So, Swiggy, well, no, before I ask you which bike you have, I'm going to tell people that, look, if we pick a bike that you have as worst bike in the world this week, don't worry, next week there'll be a new one. It's only the worst bike in the world for this week, right? We get emails from time to time where people say things, oh, you picked this as worst bike in the world. Like, how, it's a great, and I'm like, dude, the week's over. It's no longer the worst bike in the world. So just remember, send your questions, your comments, your thoughts and feelings to contact@nokomotopodcast.com. But when you send those thoughts and feelings, remember, like Tom Hanks said in A League of Their Own, there's no crying in motorcycles. So, Swiggy, you have worst bike in the world this week.
Yes.
Are you ready to reveal it?
I am.
Okay. And the worst bike in the world this week is
the 82 Yamaha XJ650 Turbo, otherwise known as the Seika.
I feel like this is Yamaha's Nighthawk that you could never really get for a good price.
Well, first of all, in terms of performance, this does actually beat the shit out of a Nighthawk 650. Oh, yeah. It's...
And you said the Seika Turbo?
The Turbo.
Okay.
Now, we can talk about the specs for a little bit, but I first want to draw your attention to the styling, because this is a bike that absolutely does not know what it wants to be.
It's like Optimus Prime stopped transforming into the truck, and he was trying to transform into a Vetter mystery ship, but it's just not working.
He just got stuck 80% of the way through.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's a lot about the styling that really informs like why this bike is all sorts of weird that goes into the specs. So this is an inline four, air-cooled 650 turbo. Which already is not sounding like a great idea.
Well, it's a chicken tax bike.
It is. But when you look at how it comes together, they really tried to simplify this bike. And as you can see, rather than have, you know, at least full side fairings, they've had to open it way up because they had to add those little side radiators for the oil coolers.
Yeah.
Because it's an inline four turbo that's oil cooled. Like, how's that supposed to work? It kind of doesn't. It's not a great idea.
Well, I blame Ronald Reagan. For people that don't know, should we explain the chicken tax real quick?
Yeah, go for it.
So Harley was not doing real great at this time.
And neither were Ford or Chrysler.
That's true. Yeah, this is around the time of the first bailout. Yeah, reference Tom Paxton, gonna change my name to Chrysler. So the Harley Davidson had just was coming out of the ownership from AMF. Is this around the time of the buyouts, or I don't know if they'd bought, if they'd been bought out from AMF yet. But anyway, Harley Davidson was not doing very well. And this is, if not post AMF, this is towards the end of AMF, I think. Anyway, so Harley was getting their asses handed to them by Japanese imports. So Harley Davidson, like through some pathetic letter, no one, this is another famous letter, I guess, in motorcycle history. So no one talks about this one, begged Reagan basically to put a tax on any imported vehicles, especially motorcycles over 700 cc's. Was it, or was it 750?
I believe it was 700.
Yeah. Which was clearly, you know, targets the CB750.
Yeah.
It was such a direct message. And Reagan mentioned, like, in a speech that Harley deserved a, what do you call it, like a helping hand or something like that. So this is the first time that in the public consciousness, we really acknowledged that Harley was a little bit more than a company. It was something that was part of the American identity. And then on the heels of this, Harley started becoming the Harley Davidson that we know them today. This is where the Eagles and the America and the fuck yeah all really started. Right. This is where, this was the whole, you've got to buy American, really, in motorcycles, took off right here. This is when it really became a bad look to be riding a Japanese bike if you were a cruiser guy, because it was all, no, we got to support American, because for the first time, there's a threat of it going away. And it's called the chicken tax because it was, this tax was tacked on to this really weird bill that mostly had to do with like livestock and like,
yeah, something like, about trade, like food imports.
Exactly. Yeah. So, there's something prominent about chickens on it, so it became called the chicken tax.
And this is the same bill that put the same tax on small pickup trucks from overseas as well.
Yeah. And thus, you only see old, rusted-out Nissan B2000s.
Yep.
Yep. The B2000 is a totally underrated vehicle.
I can't really comment on that.
That is.
Anyway. So yeah, it is a chicken tax bike, but there's so much going on here.
Wait, hold on real quick. So we didn't explain the second part, which was, so the logical conclusion was, in order to compete, all the Japanese companies had to take bikes that were 600s, 650s, and they started slapping turbos on them and tuning the engines as much as they could to make more 750, 800 type power.
Yes. Or they just said, fuck it, and made 1300 cc behemoths.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So that's kind of the origin of it. Now, there's another angle to this as well, because this bike came out shortly after the CX500 turbo from Honda. But Honda kind of made that bike as more of an engineering exercise and a little bit of a spectacle and saying, hey, look how much we can get out of a 500, rather than trying to be top of the mountain with it. And then Yamaha with this bike is trying to win a competition that only they know about in a way, and coming back at them with this bike. Now, it does make about 90 horsepower and 60 foot-pounds of torque, which for a 650 at the time is pretty incredible. But when you look at this bike, it doesn't tie together in any kind of unified vision. Oh yeah, it does. The one cool thing about it is it does say turbo on the dash for no reason.
What do you mean the one cool thing? This entire dash is fucking awesome. So, I love that it's got a downward facing needle for the boost gauge.
Yeah,
I don't. There's something great about that with the tricolor. Like there's a blue zone, a green zone, and a red zone. I love any gauge with a red zone. Yeah, it's got that 80s thing where you can't just have anything on a plain background. It's got to be on a grid or with lines behind it.
Rectangles, so hot right now.
Yeah. And this little LCD box here with the, I mean, you got a fuel gauge, you got a little battery warning light, you got your brights. What is that right there?
I can't see.
I don't know. Your oil pressure. You got a fair amount of stuff here. I don't know what this like warning light's all about. I guess that's got to be for the oil temperature.
I would imagine that's just the oil light. Yeah.
I mean, you got a fair amount of stuff here. I'm kind of into it.
So
it's very dated, but I don't know. It's kind of fetishy. I'm into these things. It's not as good as the Honda Beat scooter, but yeah. Nothing really can be. All right, sorry I cut you off.
This bike is getting pulled in so many weird directions. Even though it's turbocharged and it's a 650, and there's no other kind of similar bikes besides the non-turbocharged version, like it's a shaft drive, which doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, if you're trying to get the peak performance out of this thing, why go for the shaft drive?
Right. And by having that shaft drive, this bike is 520 pounds dry. It's a 650.
I mean, that is a lot, but a lot of bikes just kind of weighed that at this time. I'm not going to hold that super duper against it, but the shaft drive is really weird. Now, so many of these chicken tax bikes, like the CX650, the... oh my gosh, what was the Suzuki one, the inline four, little baby Katana that they turbocharged? A listener corrected me on this. Anyway, I mean, everybody came out with one of these, all the big four, and they all had terrible turbo lag. There was never really a situation where you could get them to make that extra power that the turbo would make available. Because, like I said, the lag was so bad. So if you were in any kind of traffic, I mean, it just didn't respond the way you wanted it to. It was just sort of like your shitty 650 bike for a few seconds. Oh, and then here's like weird power coming in. And
there's a reason they're not around anymore, which is most people realized that the idea of a turbo was way more interesting than the thought of actually having to ride one every day.
Yeah, the word turbo was just a big deal. It was just a really, really lucky break for the Japanese manufacturers that so many turbo cars were kind of having a bit of a renaissance in the 80s. And so they thought, oh, we can just jump on this whole turbo bandwagon, and it's the coolest word in the world right now. Let's go for it. And for a couple years, this shit flew, but eventually everyone realized, nah, it's better to just spend money on a better bike.
Yeah, this bike looks like it belongs in the parallel universe where everything is identical except for the fact that everybody wears pants with zip-off pant legs that turn into shorts.
Yeah.
There's something... It's the way that the bodywork opens up and there's no proper fairing around it for the airflow than with the horrendously dated tail section. And the way it all... And then the kind of almost Katana-esque headlight and upper fairing.
This is another motorcycle that's a strong contender for could be the bike from Cyclone.
Yes. Actually, yeah, that... Now that I'm looking... You might be onto something.
Hold on, we got to do a side by side.
It's so hard to tell with how much custom bodywork there is on it, but it's definitely possible.
Does the bike from Cyclone have a lot of custom bodywork, or is it more like spray painted cardboard just glued to it?
Yeah, I'm not talking about like actual hard work. Did I'm talking more about surface area.
I think this is the I think I don't know the it's so close. So to be nice to the Seika for just a moment, because like you said, it's a bike that's it's a victim of circumstance. It kind of just had to happen, right? But it's not for the time, I understand how it looked cool, right? And sometimes we just love to go back in time and root for the underdog. So right now, the CX 650 turbos are collectible. I don't know why, but people want them. Everyone's decided now, years later, that's the cool turbo bike. I don't get it. The Seika gets no love. But if you take a look at this bike, I think it probably did the best at that look at the time. And that's about the nicest thing I can say about it, is it's the most 80s looking thing ever. And if that's your thing, hey, it says turbo all over it. You're probably going to have a better experience if you just take the turbo off and ride it that way. It'll still say turbo and everyone will think you're rad.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of makes sense if you've got a mullet and you're wearing like a jazz splashed like polyester jacket and you're pulling up in front of the arcade to call your girlfriend on the payphone. Like, it's...
Yeah, I know
it exactly is not what you mean. A timeless look.
No, not at all. Yeah, it's not even 80s in that Don Johnson sort of way, like the ZZR yeah. was. That's
I will admit the dash is kind of cool though.
Yeah, the dash is sweet. They should just put this dash on like just new R6s.
This should right. definitely be like on the digital displays. This should be like a theme that you can set.
All right, then. We should also mention at the time the Ninja Turbo bikes were also a big deal. Those are pretty collectible as well now.
Yeah.
You know what? I take it back. The Turbo Ninjas did the 80s look way better. What am I thinking? Ugh. I tried to say something nice about the Seika. I tried.
It is kind of stuck in that late 70s, early 80s, Katana-esque sort of look.
Well, yeah, I mean, the earlier Seikas, I mean, the Seika Turbo is a little bit better because the regular Seika just does a sort of something in between a Nighthawk and a Virago. And that's really gross.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's move to best bike in the world this week.
Let's do it.
Okay. And the best bike in the world this week is the 2020 Ninja 650.
Oh.
So this is a historic moment. This is the first time a worst bike in the world has become a best bike in the world.
That's true.
Yes. Now, we've been pretty harsh to the old Ninja 650. Now, this year, there's been a redesign on it, and it's pretty bitchin'. It's basically a Ninja 400 all grown up to be the size of a 600. The only problem the Ninja 400 had, yeah, but it's a 400. Well, that's been solved. Now, the engine, as far as I can tell, is the same. They've just updated the look and the frame a little bit. Well, they've updated the frame a lot. So there's no longer that signature monoshock on the side, right? The single-sided monoshock. Right. There's one in the center there. It's a lot more Ninja 400, but you get some sweet things on this. Look, it's got the cornering lights that Kawasaki's really, really leading the way with. As I already mentioned, the awesome Ninja 400 type styling that's really just a fucking winner. And especially, you know, they've got the KRT edition. I kind of like it just in the white, honestly. I mean, blacked out, it's pretty good as well. It's starting Kawasaki, you know, like everything was matte black a couple years ago. We're starting to get some polished pieces mixed back in there. It's nice.
It is.
So the styling's on point, but again, the engine is really the same. It's still just 67 horsepower and 49 foot-pounds of torque. Now, 49 foot-pounds of torque is pretty good. At 69 horsepower, though, it's still definitely slower than an SV650. And it's a little bit more pricey, like $800 more pricey. But that $800 more pricey gets you ABS, gets you a... oh my gosh, what do you call it? The shifter.
A quick shifter.
Yes. Sorry. a slipper clutch. It gets you a lot, you know, for $8,000. And it gets you one other thing that the Honda 650 can't give you. And the SV650 can give you, but not in as cool a way. And I can't believe I'm saying this, but the Ninja 650, for the first time, gives you street cred.
Hmm.
Now, a lot of people are spitting out their coffee, doing double takes. Like, someone was, you know, turned away and just spun around in their chair and went cross-eyed. Look, quietly over the last decade, the Ninja 650 has been kicking ass in multiple racing disciplines. Not multiple racing classes, entirely different kinds of motorcycle racing sports. So before Indian came to flat track, in 2016, the Ninja 650 won the AFT championship and was runner up the 3 years before that. In,
well, the motor did.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it was a heavily modified Ninja 650, obviously, but yes. Okay. But it was a Kawasaki. It was a Ninja 650 tracker bike, whatever. Anyway, Isle of Man, loads of wins in the lightweight or junior TT, whichever it's called, or maybe it's good for both. I'm not sure. I can't remember. Anyway, I mean, John McGuinness on one of these things, right? It's mm-hmm. It's a winner at the Isle of fucking Man. But that says something. And there was somewhere else that this thing's been winning. I can't remember. Flat track. It doesn't matter. Like Moto America, Twins Cup stuff. Like, it's just been, right. Maybe not a big winner there, but competitive and racing. Weirdly, this is kind of the new cool kid on the block for just racing. We've gone from this crazy world of, you know, only adoring superbikes to getting back into a more affordable mid-range kind of racing where we're kind of bored with crazy power and racing, and we're a little bit more into subtlety and power delivery and just all-out rider skill.
Yeah.
We're getting more into, well, let's have some racing where we take away some of the electronics. Okay, we'll have ABS, but that's it, right? Let's get back to more stock racing. So the Ninja 250 kind of carried the title of the Mazda Miata of the motorcycle world. I'm ready to say I think this is now if the Ninja 250 was the Miata.
Maybe this is the S2000.
I don't think it's the S2000. I think it's the MX-5.
Okay. Yeah.
It's the same car, just somehow cooler, right? this is the Mazda MX-5 of the motorcycle world. This is a very easy access point to motorsport, and it's kind of turned into a cool bike to be seen around town on now that it's got this cool Ninja 400 styling and 67 horsepower, $8,000. I mean, it's doing a lot of really good things.
Mm-hmm. I'm so glad that they match the styling to the Ninja 400, because when the Ninja 400 came out, I thought it was the best looking Ninja. And now that they're kind of
with the old 636, that's tough. I mean, the Ninja 400 is so awesome, but the old 636.
I like the 400.
I'm a 636. I'm also an R6 guy, and those bikes are so similar too. Anyway,
but yeah, I think this it also just looks a lot more substantial now, in a way that it really didn't before.
Yeah, it's got a little bit more muscle on it, a little more bulk.
Yeah, and I mean it is a little bit more technical to a degree that's maybe a little bit silly, that I don't feel like the 400 does. But I'm cool with it.
Yeah.
I see what you mean. Yeah, I mean, because it's, I guess in a way you're definitely pointing out that there's a lot going for it that we've always given the SV650 credit for and somehow never given this bike credit for.
Yeah, it's really been woodshedding, you know? It's like when there's like a famous story. I think it was Miles Davis or Charlie Parker. One of them, I think it was Miles Davis met Charlie Parker or something at like a jam or something like that, and he just got embarrassed, and then he just went back and practiced by himself for like another 6 years, and then just emerged as this legend, right? Like the Ninja 650 has been quietly trying in the background, like training, putting in the reps, just hitting the road like a totally unknown comic, and now it's getting it special. Except not, because no one's fucking talking about how there's an all-new Ninja 650 this year, because no one's talking about any motorcycle news. Somehow all the races got canceled, thus there's no news at all. No one cares about anyone's new models, no one cares about anyone's new lineups, and we're given a really good one right here. And I'm excited, because it's the same engine. They felt there was no need to change the motor or anything. They've just changed the frame. I assume they've lightened it up or something. I don't know. That spring arm's different. They must have done things to make it better at all the racing that they're doing with it. So I imagine it's probably just going to be more competitive and start winning more. Like stepping into the light.
Yeah.
I'd never thought I'd like a Ninja 650.
Yeah, I didn't know if I was going to come around when you mentioned it, but yeah, I think I'm there with you now.
And it's also got like real 600 super sport type looks.
It's still definitely a distinctly 650 look.
You think?
Yeah, especially like the constant color swapping, like two-tone all across the fairing in this way to make it look more technical and more dramatic, especially if you look at the white version specifically.
Maybe in the white, but in the KRT edition, you don't think it's got a legit 600 look?
It's a little bit better, but I mean, yeah, it does have the lines across. I mean, from that angle, it definitely looks more 600 and more super sport, but especially the white version looks very 650.
Anyway, like I said, at the price point, you're getting a lot of the extras, the nice things like the quartering lights, your ABS, your slipper clutch, all those nice things to have. And I still no inverted forks, but it's a 650. There's no 650 that fucking needs inverted forks.
Yeah.
So there we go. Yeah, Ninja 650. It looks a shit ton better. It's the same performance we love. It's weirdly got credibility. It's super affordable. It's a great value. And yeah, I mean, embarrass all those people that bought Ninja 400s, right?
There you go.
All right.
All right.
So here, let's take a little break for just a second. I'm going to refill a drink, and then we'll be back with an announcement. And we're back with an announcement. But before that, just a little quick correction. I sort of misspoke, whatever. The Ninja 650 had a redesign in like 2018 or 2017 or something. It's still the same frame and swing arm and all of that. Really only for this year they've changed the bodywork and I think like the handlebars and some things like that. So this is essentially the bike that was... that has just recently started winning still, but it just looks so much better. That's the main difference. Anyway, everything else I said about it still holds. Right, so our announcement. Lots of people have asked us if we are ever going to organize some sort of event. We've thought about this a lot, and probably, what did you say, like 6 months ago, we came up with a concept that we thought might work one day?
Yes, thereabouts, yeah.
So, we've got this idea for an event, and I'm going to leave it up to you, the listeners, really, whether or not we do this. So, I've organized charity rides before, and frankly, it's a gigantic pain in the ass. However, I think I've come up with a way to do it, or I've been inspired on a way to do this that's not so hard to organize. And we might do this. So basically every motorcycle event has been canceled right now. As we record this, I don't know if AMA Vintage Days has been recorded, but I won't be surprised if it does. I mean, you can't really guarantee that anything's going to happen this year. So I've come up with an event that we could announce now or next week or a couple weeks from now. And it's sort of social distancing friendly. Or not, it can go either way, however you want to experience this. I think what we'd like to do is a motorcycle charity relay. So think the Cymru Knievel ride deal,
right?
Or the Manx Knievels ride that we talked with Jazz about, or Jaws, just Jazz, right? Doesn't matter. Jazz Lewis. Anyway, the Manx Knievels ride where they do a relay around the mountain course at the Isle of Man all dressed like Evel Knievel. So a lot of, you know, charity events, things like that aren't going to happen. But we thought, what if we organize our own ride, sort of plan it for late August, early September-ish, and we'll get some sort of venue, some sort of large outdoor venue. So if you just want to hang out by yourself or with your crew and stay separated from everyone else, you'd be able to do that. Or if you wanted to make it a party, if that's cool by late August, you can do that too. If you want to chill and have some beers, that'll be fine. We'll just get a police officer there with a breathalyzer, so everyone that sets out on the hour around the course has to just blow first, you know? So if you're going to do multiple laps, do one at 1 p.m. and another at 10 p.m. You can have a couple beers in between. You just got to blow clean to go first. Not a problem. We could do a live episode in the middle of it. We'd probably start at noon one day, you know, probably in the evening, record an episode live with everyone, and then end at noon the other day. So do a 24-hour relay ride. We could have it go through Denver, and we could have it go through Denver and the mountains, make it like a good hour and a half, 2 hour circle or something like that. We can do all sorts with this. We thought, like, should it have a theme like the Evel Knievel theme that the Cymru Knievels thing has, or Ride Cymru and Manx Knievels or whatever. And I thought, how about just general fancy dress? If you want to come all Mad Maxed out, great. If you want to do a Knight Riders sort of thing, double great. If you want to dress up as your favorite Smurfs character, awesome.
Or just straight Power Ranger.
Straight Power Ranger. Yeah, exactly. Everything would be cool. I'd love to see that. So what I'm going to put it up to the listeners is, if I can get 20 listeners in the next 2 weeks to email me and say, Pete, I'm in, then I'll go ahead and start planning this. I've got a couple ideas on places where it could be and what the route could be, and I'm working on that. But since it looks like we're just not going to have any motorcycle events, we might as well create one. I think the charity will either be... I think the charity's probably going to be Habitat for Humanity. That's my favorite charity or my favorite cause. And then we are probably going to require... I think we're going to say it's $50 to take part unless you can get sponsorship for more than $50, right? So if you can't raise $50 in people to sponsor you to take part in this relay, then you've just got to cough up $50 because it's a relay for charity. And you get to hang out for like 24 hours, right? I mean, I don't know. There's some value there, right? It's a good time. We got to keep it going. So we need at least like 20 people just to keep the relay going if people are leaving out on the hour, right? If that's the model. So I need at least 20 people to commit. But who knows? Maybe you're Brian from Nashville and you're like, oh, I was going to ride to GP this year, but oh, damn it, that didn't happen. Well, you've got vacation time. Ride out to Colorado and do our crazy event with us. I don't know. I know that we've got something like 100 listeners roughly within a 100-mile radius of Denver. So I don't know if we can get a fifth of you to commit to this, but I don't know. If you can commit, especially if you can commit and try to bring a friend, like this could be a pretty good little event. So I'll leave it to you. If we don't get 20 emails, hey, not a big deal. No sweat. But I feel like... we got to have at least one good event this like late summer, early fall, whatever, right?
Yeah.
Just one. And I feel this is something that we can all do together, but if you're still, you know, worried about things and what's going on, it's also something where you can still distance as well. So it's kind of like a way we can have our cake and eat it too a little bit, I think. I think it's the perfect kind of event that can still happen, that can still go on. There's a way that we can do it responsibly with what the guidelines are now, and there's a way we can do it responsibly with what the guidelines might be then.
Yeah.
It's really the only kind of event that I feel that anyone could plan about now. So there we go. If that sounds good, let us know. So let's see here. We are at about an hour. Do we want to try to pack in Made Up Motorcycle and emails then?
Yeah, let's go for it.
Okay. So Made Up Motorcycle, if you don't know how this works, this is a game that we played a really quick round of last week. This is the game where we come up with categories. We each come up with a theme and we spit out just improbable names that shouldn't work for motorcycles, and then we challenge each other on the spot to come up with what that motorcycle is, should, could, or would be somewhere in history, a time or place, or now. And there are no points. It's like, whose line is it anyway? But you know, it's really for bragging rights. There's a little bit of a skill to it, and sometimes people even sort of play along and email us their own suggestions on what a bike should be. Or they find examples of that bike actually existing in the real world. It's happened. So are you ready to reveal categories?
No, I'm struggling. Do I want to reuse my category that I only got one off of last time? That's what we're doing?
Well, that's what I was going to do. Yeah, because okay. I had so many of them.
So my category is Girl Scout cookies.
Oh, that's right. Oh, this is going to be tough. Okay, mine is guitars. All right. Do you feel strongly about going first or second?
I'll go first.
Okay, what you got?
The Thin Mint.
The Thin Mint.
Wow. To give you a little bit more wiggle room, that can either be the actual name of the bike or can be its nickname.
Yeah, we've done that before. The Thin Mint. The first thing that comes to mind is, I don't know if it exists, but I feel like it already exists. There's a flavor of the Moto Guzzi V7 that's some sort of light green and black, a sort of minty chocolate covered theme anyway. And it just screams thin mint to me. But that's not good enough. I need to go a little bit further. Thin mint. Wow, this is tough. This is the longest I've ever been stumped by one. Okay, I've got it. So it's a Moto Guzzi V7 with a minty green tank and some minor bodywork and flashes, you know. But it's turned into a board tracker with the old school super thin tires.
Okay.
And it's sponsored. The race team is sponsored by the Girl Scouts of America. And so the bike itself is called the Thin Mint.
That's pretty good. Okay.
Wow. I really pulled that. I really turned that one around. I was worried for a second there, but we always get there, don't we? Okay. So my category was guitars. And there's so many good ones. But I'm going to start with probably an easier one. The Flying V.
The Flying V. Okay. So, the Flying V has to be some sort of like land speed record world attempt bike.
Okay, I like it.
And it's probably going to be some sort of a streamliner.
Okay.
And rather than have it like kind of go in a teardrop shape back into nothing, to maximize, to perfectly maximize the aerodynamic coefficient, it's going to splay out into a sort of tail to get some downforce. And the two tail ends are going to come out wide. And that's why it's called the Flying V.
This is pretty strong. It'd only be better if instead of two wheels in line, the wheels were at the ends. I don't know why, but I just love the idea of it having two wheels, you know, each independent axle, right? Like no common axle between them. It's just, you just move the wheels from in line to the far sides of the wings. That doesn't have to be part of it. That's just what I'm seeing in my head. It really makes me laugh. I technically, really, to be a motorcycle, the wheels have to be in line, though, don't they?
I choose to believe so.
Yeah. Okay. All right. What you got next?
The tag-along.
The tag-along. Wait, is it tag-along or is it tag-a-log? I've never really understood this cookie name.
Tagalog is a language.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I've never been that big a fan. Okay, full disclosure, I've never really been into Girl Scout cookies. I don't get it. I don't really know. Like, when you say the names of these cookies, I don't picture the actual cookies in my head. I don't know which ones are which.
So for some
And help. Here's the thing about the Girl Scout cookies as well. And I know this is a weird time to just start knocking on Girl Scout cookies. But first of all, no Girl Scouts make them. They're just cookies, like any other cookies you would buy. They're made in a factory. They're just cookies, but you charge a premium for them because these little girls sell them like school candy sales style. And everyone's like, oh, they're so good. All cookies are good. They're cookies, right? Like, I've really never understood this phenomenon. And how much of this money goes to the actual Girl Scouts? Because every year I see girls selling like thousands of dollars in cookies, and it's not like they get hooked up with like, I don't know, like a Mary Kay Cadillac Power Wheels or anything. They just get like a fucking patch to sew onto a sash and told to kick rocks. I don't know. I'm not it. Okay. So explain to me what the tag-along cookie is.
It's a peanut butter patty.
That's it?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. A peanut butter patty. I need a picture of this cookie. I need to find
it. It's like the chocolate covered. It's almost like a Reese's peanut butter cup.
Oh, these ones. Okay. All right. I know what you're talking about now. You know, I love peanut butter, but again, this is kind of like a mediocre peanut butter offering.
So I already know what this bike is.
Okay. I still have to give a guess because, yeah. So this motorcycle, the tag along is. So I'm just going with the name. I'm not really going cookie-based for inspiration on this still. This is a motorcycle that comes stock with a sidecar, and it's a quick detach sidecar rig. But the deal is that this sidecar has a 50cc motor in it. So the sidecar can detach and do like 20 miles an hour.
That's almost exactly my idea.
Oh, really?
Okay. Well, I was going to say electric, but yes. But yeah, it's...
Yeah, but, electric.
Well, I was going to say
like
the tag-along...
3 miles of range.
I was going to say the tag-along was the sidecar.
Oh, and you can just attach it to anything. Yeah, that's better. That's strong. And it's a two-wheeled sidecar. Yeah, it's not got like the one big wheel on the outside. Both wheels are under you when you sit in it.
Right. But then it's either electric or a small motor, and really inside the frame is almost completely empty.
I argue also a great name for this vehicle is the Skitcher.
Not aware of the reference.
Really? Skateboards hitching a ride when guys
when you grab onto the back of it.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a good one.
Skitchin was a great rollerblading skit. Was it PlayStation or Genesis? I can't remember. I want to say it was a Genesis game called Skitchin. And so you were rollerblading, and in the entire game is you holding onto the bumpers of cars and slingshotting yourself around them, advancing from car to car, and then occasionally letting go and hitting ramps to perform stunts on the side of the road as well. And the best part about the game is when the title scene comes up and this kid in this voice where he's trying to sound real aggressive just goes, Skitchin! That was magic. Okay. All right. Next guitar. So the next one here, just so you have a reference, you don't have to include the manufacturer name, but the Warlock, the BC Rich Warlock, otherwise known as the lamest guitar you probably recognize.
Oh, is this like the 10-string guitar that you see in Guitar Center all the time?
They probably made like 7- and 8-string versions of this, but the BC Rich Warlock is just, it's the satanic-looking guitar. So just, I think we've done the Warlock before, possibly, but just in the list of guitars that people recognize, this is the douchiest one, so I had to put it on here.
Okay. This is not an easy one. Okay.
All right.
So,
the Warlock... Are you about to say the MX-21 Flying Fortress?
No.
Okay.
It's a good direction to go, though. No. I think the Warlock is... This is going to be in the near future where any... basically, any asshole can just throw together an electric motorcycle from basically, you know, parts bin supplies from China, which you kind of can do now. But it's going to have the same kind of, like, aggressive, angular bodywork. And It's going to be, it's basically just going to be like a really, really angry Z650, but it's going to be murdered out and electric. I'm trying to think of what really brings the whole warlock element into it, though. Something missing. I don't know. This is a hard one.
So I had a thought. See if you can riff off this a little bit. Honda didn't sell a lot of the... everyone calls it the Acura bike. Why am I blanking on it all of a sudden?
The NM4?
The NM4 Voltus, right? And that was supposed to be a very like nerd core sort of futuristic non-motorcycle person might buy it just for laughs motorcycle. And I feel like Honda has probably about 18 of them left unsold that they just can't move. And they just might just say to someone, fuck it. Look, I want you to take a knife and stickers and whatever you can to these last remaining 18. And by removing bodywork, I want you to give it a sort of very 2003 new metal lame sort of fantasy look to it. Like if Drowning Pool was a motorcycle, just remove bodywork and let's sell these to just 18 freaks with gauged ears and septum piercings, and let's be done with this.
What if it ends up becoming they do that, but it actually ends up being for some like super low budget, inevitable sci-fi vampires and werewolves TV show.
Yeah, like it somehow makes its way into an episode, like a rebooted episode of the Dust Till Dawn TV series.
Yeah.
And then it becomes super cool out of nowhere.
I could see that. But no, I can't. Well, I don't want to see that. But yeah. Okay. Yeah. I like that.
All right. We always get there. We always get there. All right. Give me another Girl Scout cookie that I won't recognize.
Okay. Oh, this one actually might be a real thing. Let's go with the Savannah.
I think that we've done the Savannah, but again, I need a reference. Oh, these are like those like lemon ones, right? They're just like nothing cookies, but they have lemon in them, right?
No, those are just called lemonades.
Well, what kind of cookie is this? Is this a Savannah or are these Savannahs? Wait, this is, they're called Lemon Ups.
No, not those.
What about these?
Yes.
Oh, so they look like little lemon wedges. I don't think I've ever had these.
No, this is the 100th anniversary cookie.
Oh, this is like a special edition for like this year or some shit?
No, 2012.
Oh, okay.
We're getting deep here.
Holy shit. I don't know anything about fucking Girl Scout cookies. Maybe, you know, it occurs to me I've not had so many of these. Maybe they really are amazing. I guess I wouldn't know.
It's possible.
It's highly unlikely, though. I mean, they're just fucking cookies, but I mean, all cookies are good. I'm sure they're great. I just don't think they're better than other cookies, probably. Anyway, so these are covered in powdered sugar, which weirdly gives them not a lot of character. So Savannah, we're really going off the name though, more than, I don't know why I'm making this so cookie based, but see how like there's the two N's in here though. I feel like it's like not a Savannah. It's like Savannah, the name, right? Like a woman or girl's name, like someone named Savannah rather than a Savannah. Like this is like what one of our fucking interns would be named.
Yeah.
So, this is such an infuriating and frankly stupid spelling. I don't know what they're teaching in Girl Scouts, but it's not fucking spelling. Okay. So, Savannah with as the name. Ooh. Okay. So,
oh, it's named after Savannah, Georgia, if that helps.
Wait, but Georgia's the peach state, not lemon.
I don't make the cookies, okay? Look.
Okay, so... Okay, so... Wow, so this whole thing's just a contradiction, and it's supposed to be cutesy as well. So, I'm gonna say that the Savannah is... a ripoff scooter put out by the California Scooter Company. I don't know why we always pick on them so much, but so this is a California Scooter Company scooter. It's really just a Buddy 175, but it's going to claim that it's got very two-stroke like power or something like that. It's going to do something to suggest that it's retro, like the Royal Alloy, right?
Yeah,
how it's got this suggestion of being like a Lambretta. And it sort of does look like a Lambretta until you put it next to a Lambretta and you're like, this looks nothing like a Lambretta, right?
Right.
This is going to be a Buddy 175 dressed up to be some sort of oddball, like 50s retro scooter. What's a good one that people might sort of know? Like, it's going to look like a Triumph Tigress.
Okay.
Hence the Savannah name. It's a Buddy 175 doing the...
Well,
the,
Tigers are from the jungle, but not important.
You're right. Well, yeah, they're the kings. Yeah. No, the lion's the king of the jungle. So the tiger is the king of the Savannah. In my weird logic that I've just made up.
Let's go with it.
Well, again, like this cookie doesn't make any sense either because it's from Georgia, Savannah, Georgia, but it's going lemon instead of peach. So I'm totally allowed to say that the Savannah name is a takeoff of Tiger. So it's a Buddy 175 made up to look like a Triumph Tigress scooter. But it's off in the same way that the Royal Alloy isn't really a good Vespa knockoff.
Do you think this bike is going to have like a lion like model logo? Is it going to have a model badge?
So what it's going to have is at the end of the H, it's going to have like a little like J style little tail, just the end of the H's is going to tail off. It's so bullshit cutesy. It's perfect. Again, it took a long time, but we definitely got there. All right. Next guitar. I didn't make a list of these shit. I got to remember what. Okay. The next guitar. You'll like this. The next guitar. The Jazz Master.
The Jazz Master. So many different directions you could go with this one.
I've already forgotten what tag-alongs look like. Oh, that's right. Okay.
Okay. So the Jazz Master is going to be a UJM.
Okay.
But it's actually going to be an American made UJM.
Okay.
So there are a few things that are going to be fairly different, which is It is going to be a V-twin. It's going to be shaft drive, all style, like polished wood paneling over the tank. And
yeah, leather straps and things.
And it's not going to be anything special in terms of like crazy horsepower or big, especially big torque or anything like that. It's just going to be really, really polished and refined. And it's being sold purely on the trim level.
Yeah, it's got to do something kind of... What were the weird Buell custom build bikes?
The Ronins?
Yeah, it's got to be kind of like the Ronin, where they're all a little different. I know. It's going to be a limited run. And every single one of them, by a different artist, is going to have a different jazz legend painted on the tank.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
I like that.
This is the most pretentious bike we've ever envisioned. Okay. Do we each do three?
Yeah.
Okay. I think that's pretty good. I like it when we just get to the point on this one. So... let's say that now we move on to emails. How about that?
Let's do it.
Okay. So this week we didn't have any corrections or omissions, but I think we got at least four good ones, right?
We got four, yeah. Well, one's just a one-liner that is just saying, yo, discovered your podcast, I'm liking it. And then that's basically it. But we do have a good one.
Well, at least call out who it was.
Shout out to Nicholas.
Thank you, Nicholas.
Thank you.
By the way, if anyone thinks I'm a little bit more low key this week, I have spent the last 2 days putting sprinklers in my backyard and I'm freaking exhausted. So I'm trying to bring it. I promise.
Also, the only interesting thing I can really say is Nicholas using Yahoo Mail from his iPhone. What's the story there?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm confused.
Just who's using Yahoo Mail at all?
Like, I know you've got your whole address book on there. You've probably got some old emails saved up, but it's time to move on. You gotta dig yourself out of that hole.
Okay.
Okay. Next email is from Colin, who has emailed us before. And he says, hey guys, Colin here. With all this extra time on my hands, I have been scanning Craigslist quite a bit, and I found this intriguing machine. If I had some extra cash to burn, I would definitely buy this thing, and I've spent too much time trying to justify it. It looks like a fun little bike, and it checks a lot of boxes for you guys as well. First off, it's Italian, and built by a defunct company. The model was never actually sold in the U.S. and appears to have been had a relatively short 3-year production run. Reliability is suspect to begin with, and parts will probably be near impossible to find. The only thing I can find was a Wikipedia page in Italian. It does have some redeeming qualities. It's oil injected, so you don't have to worry about pre-mixing fuel. It only has 2,800 miles on the clock, so maybe there's some time to enjoy it before everything goes to shit. And to top it off, the color scheme is just fucking awesome. It has fun and function emblazoned on the bodywork. Need I say more? It also says, considering Swiggy's weakness for bikes under the Piaggio umbrella, this doesn't seem like too big a stretch. Sell the Goldwing, make this the next podcast bike. Now, in my defense, I don't wish my disease upon other people. I do steer people away from the bikes I am infatuated with. That being said, he linked us to a Craigslist ad for a Kajiva Tamanaco, this little 250cc two-stroke kind of dual purpose.
It's an enduro, yeah.
And I will agree, this bike looks rad. Although that may be a controversial opinion.
I think it's pretty sweet, too. It's an unusual bike. It's certainly an acquired taste. Yeah, so the standard colors are pretty sweet, but I love that this bike came with a Lucky Strike racing livery as an option.
Yes.
But it's it's double cool too, because they could just go out straight for Lucky Strike. By this time, it was already becoming just a little bit weird for cigarette advertising. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's 1988. You still definitely could. But So anyway, they called it the logo. It's Lucky Strike, clearly. It's Lucky Strike colors. It's the Lucky Strike logo. It's just instead of Strike, it says Explorer. But they're going for a Lucky Strike racing livery for this, clearly. And it's pretty sweet. I think it's the 125 that is the Lucky Explorer that you could get. And because there's a 125 version as well. And the Tominako is the two. So there's the Tominako Lucky Explorer is the 125. And then there's just the Tominako, which is the 250. So, yeah, they're sweet, but... So the Lucky Explorer was not as good as the Super City.
Mm-hmm.
We love the Super City, but this was supposed to be pretty close to as good as the Super City, the 125. I don't know, this whole category of lightweight enduro bikes that were kind of spiffed up for city commuter slash youth hooligan usage is a whole category of bike that just never caught on anywhere except mainland Europe, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know if there was just something about the Dakar Rally that was so cool at that time that everyone wanted a bike like that in Europe. It's sort of like a pre-adventure bike wave that hit Europe, I guess.
Sort of. I'm not really sure, but yeah.
So in that way, this bike is really hipster, and there's the whole 80s-ness of it. But because it's something that just was never, ever a thing here, it's somehow not hipster either.
Well, I mean, I'd love to have one.
To someone who's never seen one before and isn't really familiar with this category of bike, it's like seeing a Bosa Zoku bike for the first time. If you're not prepared, it's jarring to look at.
Yeah.
I mean, do we need a two-stroke 250 in our lives?
I don't think
so. With worn-out 80 suspension. It is cool, but the one particularly in that ad is a little bit beat up, and I have to admit, I also saw it as soon as it hit Craigslist and definitely revisited that ad for a few days and ultimately decided no. Looking at this bike on Craigslist is kind of like watching porn that you feel guilty for watching. Like, ooh, that was weird. Okay, so let's move on to the next email.
All right, next email is from John. And John says, "Hey guys, love your podcast. Just made it through the first 25 episodes, and episode 25 hit close to home as I've owned multiple Hayabusas and currently a ZX14R. It's two worst bikes in the world. I don't know shit about the Blackbird, because as you know, the Busa quickly overshadowed it and won the speed wars. I think you guys talked about the name Hayabusa before, but somehow translates to Peregrine Falcon, which only does 200 miles, but also eats Blackbirds. I currently have a 14R and I drag race, So now the bike sits around 70-inch wheelbase and is low enough to kill ants, but stock. So you guys just need to ride one. Or you guys just need to ride one. They do go zero asshole real quick. I'm not sure. Oh, 0 to asshole. Okay. Real quick. They aren't light, but they aren't much heavier than a Gen 2 Hayabusa and comfortable. The size is great for me at 6'3", 210, because I look like a monkey fucking a football folded up on most sport bikes. Anyway, before you think that I'm just some go big or go home type, I also own a Z900 RS, which is the best bike on the planet, and am currently hunting for a ZX7 because I agree that 90 superbikes are dope and will be the next big thing. Sorry if this email is rambling, as I'm half-ass working. Thanks for what you do. Because of your show, I have a new appreciation for MotoGP and hope to make it down to COTA in November if this COVID bullshit goes away.
Yeah, or make it to our 24-hour relay ride, if it happens.
There you go.
Yeah, so bikes like the Busa and the ZX14, we've been harsh on, but they have their place, and I don't dislike them. You know, when I finally rode the Hayabusa, it was enjoyable. The only thing about it was, I was like, this bike just doesn't turn. And I imagine the ZX14's got to be the same way. But I might think differently now because I really, really liked Brolin's K1300 R or RS R K1300 R
the BMW
Busa. Yeah, I really liked that one. So I'd like a ZX. Maybe I've evolved a bit. I need to give a ZX14 a try, but its legacy and place in history is so odd. You know?
Yeah.
It's hard to, I don't know the identity of that bike. I guess I'll have to ride it to know. Okay. And next email.
Last email we have, and this is from Kyle. And Kyle says, "Hey, Swiggy and MotoGP. I know how much Swiggy loves his name first. It's true. It's one of the last few sources of validation that I have. So thank you. His name is not Kyle. It's a lie, apparently. His name is Louis, apparently. It's weird getting a whole bunch of emails from email addresses named with people's names on them and then being told that they're different people. This seems to be a recurring thing, which I don't understand.
I don't either.
But there you go. He says, "I love your show and love your realistic input on life as moto riders. Best and worst bike is the best, but also your input style and party style living is what strikes me the most. I am a Colorado-born motorcycle enthusiast, 32 years old. I now live in Melbourne, Australia, lived in Littleton, Colorado most of my life, and even in Aurora. I grew up riding vintage motocross with my pops and then moving to downhill mountain bikes once living on my own. Love two wheels and have a true old soul when it comes to viewing life through motorcycles. I came across your podcast with my new way of life here in Australia. I used to have a 12-minute commute to work by bicycle and now deal with a grueling 1.5-hour drive into the city of Melbourne." He has a bit about making sure that we pronounce Melbourne the right way. Anyway, he says, "After my move here, I knew I would fall into the ride." Ooh, this is weird. So he said, "After my move here, I knew I would fall into the ride on the road. My older sister back home in Denver had a 1973 TX650 sitting in the snow uncovered for a few years, neglecting it and not giving it a good life. Due to high prices, lambs, motorcycles, and my love for vintage shit, I decided to offer my sister $1,000 for her steed to make the decision to import to Australia. We should note that LAMS is the
learner approved motors something.
Yeah, and it's basically the limited horsepower to weight ratio in under 650 cc's.
Yes.
Yeah. It says it falls into the LAMS motorcycles for power to weight ratio. Since then, I have fully serviced suspension, electricals, ignition, alternator brakes, and the whole lot. Man, I could go on and on here, but I want to keep this short enough to grab your attention and hear what you think, what you two think of my story. Maybe I will ride again. You two make my day every time I sit in a four-wheeled vehicle with shitty drivers. I have listened to every episode from 1 to 114. Congratulations on your accomplishment. Thank you for your time and efforts. Also, real quick, because of you two, I have been turned on to MotoGP. I made it a goal to import my bike, fix it, and get it reliable enough to ride to Phillip Island, which is 1 hour away, to camp and ride to MotoGP race at Phillip Island. What a damn good experience. It will be an annual thing from now on. And then he says, P.S. One episode, you mentioned someone rebuilding their motorcycle and mentioned attending to the M/C. It means master cylinder. I only know this from all the work I had to put into my TX from reading tons of forums and people abbreviating things. I thought I would share. Keep slaying the dragon. Keep the old soul alive with the intro song, Hillbilly Guitar Playing Attitude. I don't know if you would call Arlo Guthrie hillbilly, but...
Well, I'd also played it nothing like he plays it.
That's true.
So, Well, first of all, the XX650 that he's got there is sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Riding it to Phillip Island is double sweet. If I had to think of GP races that I'd like to go to, that's a top one. I mean,
yeah,
for me, that would be up there with going to Valencia or any of the big races, Jerez. I mean, that Phillip Island's just always a great race. And I don't know, it's been so long since we've been to Australia. I haven't been since I was 60. I haven't been there for 20 fucking years.
It's been at least 18 years since I've been.
Yeah. Anyway, no, super cool. I love that he's gotten in GP, he's going to Phillip Island. It's a bit of a dream, right? Importing the bike to Australia from Colorado. Weirdly, we're thinking of importing a bike from Australia to Colorado, right?
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if there's anything he can tell us about how that works. Although, probably not. I'm sure going the other direction, just nothing applies, right?
Yeah.
But he would know something about the shipping of a bike like that. That's interesting, too. But really, the most important thing about this email is it made me think, do we need to change the name of our listeners from Noco Locos to just straight up Dragon Slayers?
Well, we never said we were slaying the dragon.
It's true.
We said we were fighting the dragon and then fucking the dragon. There's no terminal outcome in either of those affairs explicitly. You know, I kind of want as a piece of show art, like a weird, like Monty Python-esque dragon squaring up with like old school fisticuffs with a guy in like the full like Kill Bill motorcycle outfit.
That'd be pretty good. Or Valentino Rossi.
Yeah.
I'd go with that. Okay, so that wraps up emails, I think. And that puts us at about an hour and 40-ish minutes. So I think we did pretty good this week, considering how crazy tired I am. So let's start wrapping this one up. Again, going to remind everyone to leave us those ratings and reviews, because that's just your cost of admission. If you've heard more than one episode of this, well, now you're listening to multiple hours for free. Isn't that worth leaving a review? Because leaving reviews is free. It doesn't cost you anything. And we're going to remind everyone, send us emails to contact@nokomoto.com, especially if you're going to commit to wanting to do our charity relay ride at some point later, if we have enough interest. And if not, that's cool, but I think it'd be good to do it. And with that, I'll remind everyone to stay safe, stay tuned, and keep fighting the dragon. Let's do the outro.
Let's go.
And I don't wanna die, just want to ride on my motorcycle. Go.